The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
Animals love Eric. Why? Because he's one of them. He eats tin cans like a goat, and he can inflate his throat just like a bullfrog. And if he gets scared, he hops away, doink, doink, just like a cricket. It's pretty crazy. And now here he is, everybody's favorite manimal, Eric Metaxas.
Yeah, you got my number, Todd Wilkerson. I got to tell you. Hey, Albin.
Yes.
It's Friday.
Oh, good.
Friday. It's Friday.
I'm glad it is.
We've got a very special show today. My friend Shannon Bream, we've had her on the show, she calls Friday Fry-yay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because
it's exciting.
Really,
it's before the weekend.
Clever.
So, anyway, it's Friday, and today in hour one.
Fry-yay.
Fry-yay. We speak to our friend John Zmirak.
Yes.
Maybe you've never heard of John Zmirak.
No, I have.
But he's an outrageous legend. And sometimes, just before he comes on the program, we say, release the Zmirak. It's kind of like release the Kraken, because there's nobody like John Zmirak.
I thought it was release the Beagles.
That's the cute side of him. The Kraken is the other scary side. Release the Zmirak is the other side. But anyway, we have John Zmirak in hour one today talking about his ideas on immigration. He wrote a book on immigration. He's written so many books. He's brilliant. We'll be with him in a couple of minutes. In hour two today, we're talking to John and Corey Cooper, who formed the band Skillet. If you haven't heard of Skillet before, you have now. And if you have heard of Skillet before today, you can't miss hour two.
Because
this is a kind of exclusive interview with these guys.
And if you like tattoos, get ready.
And if you're listening to this on the radio, you probably won't be able to see the tattoos. So you have to watch the YouTube video. You know what? There's a good opportunity for me to say, a lot of the programs we're doing in our glorious TBN studios, even though people obviously hear them on the radio or on podcast, most of them are now available on YouTube under the Eric Metaxas Show. So if you want to see the tattoos, sometimes people come on here with open sores, and you don't see that on the radio.
Yeah.
And if you want to see a festering wound, for example,
well, we did a whole week on leprosy. Somebody
comes on here, so you sometimes you just want to get the visual.
You want to get the visual.
For example, I'm very tanned today because I was in the sun.
Yes, you were.
Some people are tan for other reasons, like for example, they spray it on. In my case, I was in the sun in Greece. But you know what I heard?
What?
It's the same sun as you have here right in New York City.
That's a scientific fact.
Right in New York City. And it's about the same distance away. And so really, sitting out in the sun in New York, in Central Park, is no different than sitting out in the sun in Greece, except it sounds more glamorous if you say, oh, I was in Greece. Yeah. But anyway, okay. Actually, I want to talk more about my trip to Greece, but before I mention that, a couple of the things. We're going to have John Zmirak in just a moment, folks. So if you need to take a cigarette break, you don't want to hear my updates, that's fine. I understand. People tune in for Zmirak. Yeah. That's, you know what? That's between you and your God. But I want to say that a couple quick things. First of all, the TBN TV show is on tonight. That's Friday night, 6 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Eastern. And 10:30 p.m. on Sunday. And our guest is Pastor Anthony Thompson. Remember the horrific shooting a few years ago in Charleston, South Carolina, in a black church. A young man murdered nine people. And it's beyond belief that that happened. But it beggars belief all the more that these profound Christian people, at the top of the list is Pastor Anthony Thompson, that they publicly forgave this young man for doing something so horrific. If you want to understand what Christianity is, folks, that is Christianity. There's no other way to put it. It doesn't make any human sense. It's beautiful. It's moving. It's shocking. Mm-hmm. And it's basically as countercultural as you could ever get. So that's tonight on TBN,
and
6 p.m.
It's part two from last week. You interviewed the director of the film.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. And by the way, you can watch it all at the TBN website, or you can get the long form version of it on YouTube. Go to YouTube, Eric Metaxas Show, because, you know, sometimes you want the whole thing. It's all there. Share it with your friends, please, because we don't have like a budget for sharing this stuff with the world. But sometimes people say to me, why didn't I know about that? Yeah. You know, and a lot of the stuff we've been doing lately has been getting a ton of views on YouTube. So
yes.
I just want to say it's a radio show. It's a podcast. But we have this other dimension. And we hope you'll check it out and subscribe to our YouTube channel, please.
Please.
OK. In a couple minutes, we got Zmirek. In hour two, we have Skillet. And in hour two, I'll talk more about my trip to Greece. But right now, I have to say that before I went to Greece, I spent a week at the Camp of the Woods. Camp of the Woods is an Adirondack camp, a Christian camp. I love it. We've been there many, many times. And people think I'm on some like big vacation. No. Usually, I'm writing a book or something like that. So I'm not like out kayaking and, you know, ziplining and all the fun stuff that people do. I spoke three times when I was there. People only showed up for one of them. That's not true. No, I spoke three times. And I love Camp of the Woods. And I said, I have to tell my audience about this. It's in the Adirondacks. So it's about 4 hours north of New York City. But it is you could fly into Albany. People come from everywhere. But it is so wonderful. The head of it is Jim Hammond and his wife, Deb. He's amazing. And the guy who headed it up for many years before Jim was my friend Norm Sanju. Norm Sanju started the Dallas Mavericks. He's a basketball legend. He's just a huge legend and an amazing man. And Norm Sanju, you know, took this camp from they were in trouble. I don't know if it was 20 years ago or whatever. And he kind of for as a volunteer, you know, set them back on a good course. And they are just thriving. Every 2 years they have Ravi Zacharias as their speaker for the whole week.
Wow.
So I just missed Ravi. They have great speakers. Camp of the Woods with hyphens. Camp of the Woods.
Do they actually have zip lining there?
They have a zip line. I did it once.
You could write while you're zip lining.
I did it. Well, yeah. I can't exactly bring my laptop up there in the zip line. But I got to tell you, you have to climb this tall pine tree to get to the platform to get on the zip line.
Wow.
And I didn't like that.
Yeah.
It actually scares me. Yeah. I'm not scared of heights in theory. Like if I'm in a plane,
that's
if somebody says you want to go skydiving, I would think like, yeah, I would do that. But when it's far enough that you can, you know, get a clear sense of how your body would break as it hit the ground, then I'm not interested. So that was hard for me. The zip line was hard. But I actually did go kayaking because my sweet wife, Suzanne, always forces me to do something other than write. And we went kayaking and we went on this, you kind of go through this culvert. Nobody would normally go through there, but we knew that if you get to the other side, you're in this whole kind of like swampy creek and stuff like that. And I spooked a crane.
Ooh.
I looked, what do you mean, ooh?
Well, I looked, you don't want to do that. Nature's going to, has a way of getting back at you, sir.
I looked in the distance, I saw this like prehistoric looking bird head and I thought it's not moving. So it's clearly not alive. And then as I got closer, it lifted off, and it was a whoo, whoo, whoo. So it was it was pretty impressive. And there was a beaver dam there. If you ever want proof that evolution cannot be what Darwin said it was, just look at a beaver dam. Like the idea that these animals evolved and build these complex structures, like, yeah, they just kind of figured it out, or, you know, it is just mind-blowing. So that's Camp of the Woods. Yeah, I love Camp of the Woods, and I just think people need to know about it. And Christian Union, they were the ones, I kind of went up there with my friend Matt Bennett and Christian Union. Christian Union is another extraordinary organization. They reach out to the Ivy Leagues. It's a Christian ministry to the Ivy League schools, and I was there, and I did some speaking for them. But I cannot say enough about Christian Union, and I you know what? I need to have Matt on this program.
We need
to have Matt Bennett on this. What is wrong with me? Maybe I had him on like a few years ago, but he is amazing. He's the one that introduced me to Ken Fish.
Oh.
So I have him to blame.
Ah.
Ken Fish is just nothing but a kook. I'll never have him on the show again, except very soon I will have him on again. No, I love Ken Fish, but so I'm sure that some people tune in, they're like, what?
Mm.
What? Mm. Okay, we're going to go to break. When we come back, the amazing John Zmirak. Release the Zmirak. And in our two, Skillet. And finally, do not forget to sign up for the newsletter. Go to ericmetaxas.com. Folks, you're missing a lot. I got to tell you, the photos, the videos, ericmetaxas.com. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Eric Metaxas Show. Catch you on the other side of the break. Orleans, for those of you scoring at home, welcome back at the Eric Metaxas Show, where it's always the mid-70s. I'm talking to John Zmirak. John Zmirak, welcome back.
Thanks, Eric. Good to be back.
Listen, there are a couple of articles that you wrote at stream.org, where I hope people will go, that I want to talk to you about. One is, our test for immigrants should be nakedly political, and then you wrote one on the death penalty. You want to talk about the immigrants article first?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that.
So what do you mean by the title, our test for immigrants should be nakedly political?
Well, how should we decide what kind of immigrants to let into the country? I mean, back in 1926, they imposed a national and racial criterion, which we're uncomfortable with now, but the policy was they wanted to keep the ethnic balance of America roughly the same. So if we were 60% from the British Isles currently as of 1926, 60% of our immigrants should come from the British Isles. If it was 20% from Italy, 20% from Italy. They wanted, the emphasis was on stability. From 1926 to 1965, our immigration policy was based on keeping the blend of people stable in America because they thought huge demographic changes would unsettle the country politically and culturally.
So that was from the mid-20s to the mid-60s for 40 years.
Right.
We had this as a policy. Now, I have to say, I never heard that before, and I find that very interesting. In other words, this idea that we had, I would say, reasonable diversity in the 20s and in the years afterward. There were periods before that in this country where we had gigantic waves of immigration from Ireland and other places like that. So
hordes of people like my ancestors and yours. And that was when we needed unlimited cheap labor, because we had just conquered these huge states from Mexico and these huge states from the Indians. We were the economic powerhouse of the world. We were the leading, or becoming the leading, manufacturer in the world. We needed as much cheap labor as possible. And if people agreed not to overthrow the government, we would pretty much take them and count on them working in our factories. Also, there was no welfare state, and there was no affirmative action, and there were no quotas. It wasn't as if my Croatian grandfather could come over and demand that his kids get classes in Croatian and get affirmative action against native-born Americans because there weren't enough Croatians represented at a particular law firm. There was not multiculturalism encouraging Croatians to stay in ethnic ghettos and hate the non-Croatians. And so it was entirely a different country. You know, one out of three Italians who came to America as an immigrant turned around and went back home. One out of three. How many Guatemalan or Honduran people who come to America for economic reasons, even if they say it's asylum, how many of them are going to go back when they can get more money on food stamps than they could in America than they could work 60 hours in Honduras?
This is a big point. I always want to underscore these things so they're not missed. What you just said, there was no big state, governmental public teat from which to drink. There was just what you earned by the sweat of your brow. That has changed dramatically. And I do remember my father came over in the 50s. And my mother came over in the 50s. And my father, it wasn't really until the early 70s that he determined for sure that we weren't going back to Greece. He felt kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? He was homesick. He felt a strong identity with Greece. So it really was something that he thought about. And I know many Greeks that went back. I know many that I grew up with that they went back. And it is interesting because you go where there's opportunity. There are not many people going back to Greece today if they're here. But I have to say, you're right, that many people came here. They worked hard. They sent money home. There are a lot of people in India, cab drivers here in New York, who they're here working their tails off, making money, sending it home, and planning to go back home. They're not bringing their family here to live in Queens. They would rather go home. But when you're talking about folks coming from Central and South America, you're quite right. They have no place to go back to. It's a crime-ridden, chaotic, almost anarchic mess. And so it is a different situation.
Another thing that's happening is where all the men are leaving El Salvador. One out of three El Salvadorans, one out of three now lives in the United States.
Say what? One out of three?
One out of three El Salvadorans now lives in America from some statistic I saw. Mm. Now, a lot of that is men. The men have left their wives and kids behind, and they work here, and they send back money. And those kids grow up fatherless in much the same kind of you know, dysfunction that fatherless children endure in American housing projects. So we are destroying the families in El Salvador and Guatemala by letting the fathers come here to work cheap so that we don't have to hire native-born American, black, and Hispanic, and working-class whites. So American businessmen, the Chamber of Commerce types, who are usually the open borders Republicans, they are benefiting from undermining the family and society in these Central American countries. So, okay, our test used to be ethnic, and unfortunately, some of the people behind the 1926 law believed in crackpot eugenics. They thought Northern Europeans were genetically superior to Southern Europeans or Eastern Europeans or blacks or Asians, and they had bad pseudoscientific arguments. But the policy ended up working pretty well for America because all those waves of immigrants that had come before, they had time to assimilate. They didn't keep having new people coming in from the old country so that Italian Americans could just marry somebody from Italy who just arrived. Instead, they married an Irish or a Puerto Rican person, and they blended into a melting pot. If you continually have a wave of people from the old country, you create ethnic ghettos where somebody from Somalia can bring a bride in from Somalia and their kids can grow up speaking a Somali dialect and practicing radical Islam that's popular in Somalia.
What we have right now in the district of Omar?
Ilhan Omar. They imported a whole Somali district for her to represent in Congress. And that wasn't just Obama. That was Bush, too. George W. Bush bought into this diversity nonsense and encouraged massive refugee resettlement. There was no reason to take refugees from Somalia, fly them over 12 safe Muslim countries where they could go to live, and bring them all the way to Minnesota just to mess up the community there so it has to have radical mosques. That was a direct attack on an American community. They did the same thing in Maine. Lewiston, Maine, they flooded it with Somali tribesmen from the desert. They put them in one of the coldest parts of America, where there were no jobs. The factories had already closed. There were no jobs for the native people. So they're all on federal assistance, but they're voting Democrat. And that's what matters.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so when you say our test for immigrants should be nakedly political, what do you mean now by nakedly political?
Well, there's a debate among conservatives, and there was this Professor Amy Wax who gave a talk where she said, you know, we probably want people whose culture is closer to our founding culture. So we're probably going to want Western Europeans because they're more similar to the founders. And then Matthew Schmitz, who works at First Things, and he's this weird mix. He's religiously conservative, but he's a socialist in terms of economics, which is a strange mix. But there you go. He wants to let in lots of Latin Americans because they're devout Catholics, he says, and that's closer to the founders than secularized Europeans. Now, I think both of those are bad ideas. A cultural test, an ethnic test, a religious test, those are all bad ideas. They all will sound to people like racism or tribalism. I have a much simpler test. How do other people recently arrived from that country vote in American elections? Do they vote pro-life? Do they vote pro-gun rights? Do they vote for religious liberty? Do they vote for smaller government and lower taxes? All those things, which you and I believe, are essential both to the moral regeneration of America and to its economic survival and the preservation of the Constitution. Those issues, which are so important, the Democrats are trying to flood state after state with people from Latin America, 80% of whom, according to the Pew Research, want bigger government. 80% of Latin American immigrants now in the United States want bigger government with more programs, which means the Democrats. So one state is going to turn blue after another. Texas could soon become a blue state.
Okay, hang on, John.
Never again.
Hang on. We're going to go to a break. I want to ask you, I've got some questions for you on that. This is fascinating. Folks, I'm talking to John Zmierik. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Do not go away. Hey, folks, that's the way he likes it. And I'm talking to John Zmierak. That's the way I like it. John Zmierak, we're talking about your article at The Stream called Our Test for Immigrants Should Be Nakedly Political. You were just saying that we ought to allow to come to our country people who have some of the values that you and I do. How, first of all, would it be...
But I want to determine those values in a very particular way.
Okay.
Okay, because in the 90s, Republicans were saying, oh, Latin Americans are pro-family, they're pro-life, we got to let them in and they'll vote our way. They don't vote our way, okay? We did that for 20 to 30 years. They don't vote our way. When Latin Americans come here, 80% of them want bigger government. Look at the states where they have moved here. California, Arizona, in Texas. To a lesser degree, these people tend to vote Democrat because they're poor and they benefit from poverty programs, and that trumps everything else. And that is how they vote, and it's how they've continued to vote. I mean, the way working class Irish in Massachusetts, they may have socially conservative views, but they vote for Kennedys. Okay, it doesn't matter. Their economic self-interest trumps whatever family values they have. I don't care what family values they have in their own families. That's not my business. I care how they vote. If they vote to keep abortion legal through 9 months of pregnancy, I don't want more of them coming here. If they vote for the government to take our guns away, I don't want them coming here. If they vote for Democrats who are going to stuff the Supreme Court with people who want to crack down on churches if they don't perform same-sex weddings, I don't care if in their private lives they have good ideas. If they vote badly, if they would vote for socialism or Sharia or any other evil political system, and I think the Democratic Party has left the mainstream and is now a crank leftist party that is against the values of the American founding. So fundamentally, if they're going to vote Democrat, I don't want them in the country.
Well, look,
The Democrats
right.
only want them because they're going to vote Democrat.
But John,
that's enough reason to keep them out.
Okay, but here's – well, look, that's Ann Coulter's point. She's
yes,
been making
she's
this
right.
for years, and she's right, and I would dare say that Trump – got some of his ideas from her book, Adios America, which came out, what was it, 3 or so years ago. But here's my question. We blame the Democrats for being nakedly political.
Yeah, and we should stop that. We should stop blaming them and just imitate them.
Okay, so the question in this case is, how would we do that? In other words, they're doing it disingenuously. Are you saying we ought to be clear about what we're doing, or you're saying we ought to as well be disingenuous?
No, we should be clear about it. Because if we are disingenuous in our immigration policy, if we talk about the American founding and values, and people will just think it's a mask for racism. They'll think, no, you just don't want more brown people here. And no, that is not true. If those brown people will vote Republican, I'm fine with having them here. And I still don't understand
how you expect to pull that off. Who is supposed to advocate for this? I mean, it's one thing for you and I to discuss this, but it doesn't seem to me that it would play well.
All right, here's how you make it play well. Donald Trump goes to Texas. He says, you guys have some really good gun laws here. You want to keep those gun laws? Maybe don't bring in tens of thousands of voters who are going to vote to repeal them. And you see how their cousins are voting. You see the trends. You know, if you want more Democrats running your cities like Baltimore, bring in more Democrat voters.
Well, I guess
just be open.
I wonder. Aren't people already sort of making this case? Maybe not as clearly as you've just made it.
No, I don't think they are. The Republicans are scared to death of this issue because the racism charge is so ready to hand among the Democrats. And if we are trying to sound high-minded, people are going to assume that we have some dark agenda. Well, you know what? Our agenda is not that dark. We want to win elections because we want to promote policies that we think are good. And if you vote against these policies, they're going to vote to take away our...
You're breaking up there, John. Hang on a second. You're breaking up. Repeat that sentence. For some reason, we're breaking up today. Go ahead.
We support certain values, including low taxes, small government, gun rights, religious liberty, unborn life, traditional marriage. We don't want to bring in people. We don't want to flood our states with people who are going to vote the wrong way because those values are important. So if you're pro-life, you have to be for border control. Sorry. But that's the facts. Amnesty equals abortion.
Right.
And you talk about those crucial issues which have moral value. If you want abortion to be legal 9 months, all 9 months in 50 states, just keep doing what we're doing and not building a wall and letting my own Catholic bishops flood the country with immigrants and collect federal contracts for it. If you want to make sure we never again have a Republican president, just keep bringing in cheap labor that suits the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, once again, I think Ann Coulter has made this case many, many, many times, and nobody seems to be listening to her unless they're quietly listening.
I'm trying to echo that. I have a book on this, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration, where I have a whole chapter on this.
You've got a number of great books. That's at the top of the list.
But there's precedent for this. Jerry Brown didn't want to take the Vietnamese boat people because they were anti-communist. He was afraid they would vote Republican. He admitted it.
Wow. Jerry Brown didn't want to take the Vietnamese boat people. That is amazing.
No, because...
We're going to another break. Holy cow. We're out of time. We'll be right back with more John Zemirak. Stick around, folks. Show. We are spinning the hits for you young people out there. I'm talking to John Zemirak. John, you wrote another article. I want to go from the frying pan into the fire. You wrote an article at The Stream about the death penalty. You say the death penalty is pro-life, and those who oppose it usually aren't. Let's talk about
that.
Right. This is really important.
That's right. Okay, so it's very hard to find somebody who's pro-abortion who is also for the death penalty. It's funny. Virtually all of them have adopted an opposition to the death penalty. And you would think that's kind of curious. You know, they don't think unborn children deserve to be protected, but they're worried about convicted murderers and terrorists. They think it was wrong to kill the Nazi war criminals after Nuremberg. It was wrong to execute Timothy McVeigh. It would be wrong to execute the guy who shot up the synagogue in Florida. But it's okay to, you know, abort a child all through 9 months of pregnancy just, you know, because you don't want another girl. Or if you find out the kid has Down syndrome or, you know, just any reason. They want abortion to be legal all 9 months for any reason, but they're not willing to execute Timothy McVeigh. Now, what is that about? And that's what I analyze in the article.
Right. So what is that about? Because it does seem that you're right, basically, that it's a liberal position that the death penalty is inhuman and wrong, and yet they tend to be very pro-abortion. So what is your reasoning behind that?
They don't have a standard of justice. They're not thinking of the death penalty or even imprisonment fundamentally as society enacting justice, society correcting the imbalance, society avenging the deaths of innocent people that at the hands of a murderer. That is traditionally going back to, you know, the covenant of Noah in the Bible and ancient Greece and Code of Hammurabi. Every civilization is based on the ideal of justice. But they're getting away from that ideal of justice. Now what they're arguing for instead is harm reduction. If we can keep the murderer cooped up so he can't kill anybody else except maybe other prisoners, then that's good enough, because they're not looking for justice. They're looking to make life safer and more comfortable and to diminish suffering. So what they have is a utilitarian idea of crime rather than a justice-based one.
Well,
so they're treating people essentially like animals at a rescue shelter, and this dog has bitten children before, so we can't ever put it in a home, but we can keep it cooped up so we don't have to put it to sleep.
Right.
And if you have no idea of justice, then aborting children who might grow up in a poor family or might be handicapped or might keep the mother from finishing law school, you're trying to diminish suffering. And aborting that child diminishes the suffering of the adult woman. So at the same standard is at work. You don't care about justice. You care about coming out with what's kind of the happiest outcome viewed from a materialistic, utilitarian point
of view.
But
now why do you suppose that people today who would identify as political liberals have done away with this idea of justice? Is it because justice seems harsh and cruel? And when we think of justice, we think of the God of the Old Testament, a vengeful God. Is that the thinking behind it? Not that the God of the Old Testament is that God. There's only one God. But I'm saying that it seems to me that's part of the background of it.
It's part of it. It's also, they don't have a notion of human dignity. Human beings are really not fundamentally different from animals, because we're all just random products of evolution. So we're just the species that happens to be not a little lower than the angels, but a little higher than the dolphins.
Okay, let me, and actually probably in many cases not, but let me tease this out a little bit, because I think you're quite right in what you just said, and you mentioned the issue of human dignity. You're sort of saying, I guess, that when you murder a human being, it in a way, the dignity of the one who was murdered and the dignity of the one who did the murder is served by the death penalty. In other words, treat you like an adult. I treat you like someone who has free will, not like some animal ruled by his genes. And I accord you some level of dignity. And to go along with what you're saying, the trend either to abolish the death penalty or to no longer kill someone in what I would consider a dignified way. In other words, if I've done a terrible thing and you put me in front of a firing squad, I would say that's a dignified way to leave this world. Being hanged is less dignified, but it is still more dignified than being euthanized like an arthritic dog by being given an injection on a vinyl table. There's something about that which I find horrifying and grotesque. But it goes along with what you're saying, that we are treating ourselves like animals. Because really, if somebody's committed a heinous murder, the idea of giving them an injection and quote unquote putting them to sleep really, in my mind, robs that man of his dignity.
I agree. I think firing squads and hangings are much more appropriate. Think about it. If a tiger eats someone at a zoo, they put it to sleep. They don't execute it for murder. They don't judge, oh, this lion is guilty. They just say, oh, it's a danger to the community. Well, if the standard is not justice, it's just whether someone's a danger to the community or not, you could imprison innocent people who you think might be dangerous. If you saw the great movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise, it was all about arresting people who seem like they're about to commit crime before they can commit the crime.
Right.
Because justice is not the standard. Safety is the standard. And one more thing. Liberals who are for abortion, often they assuage their conscience by saying, well, at least I'm against the death penalty. And that makes them feel like they're doing something good. Mm. And they're sticking up for life in a way that others aren't. So it's what they do instead of opposing abortion. It makes me think of Pilate. Instead of releasing Jesus, who was innocent, he released Barabbas, who was guilty. So people who are for abortion and against the death penalty, they want to crucify Jesus, but they do want to set Barabbas free.
That'd be a great title for one of your pieces, since I know you're always looking for titles. Barabbas. Give us Barabbas. We'll be right back with John Zmirak. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey there, folks. We're taking you into the summer weekend with a little Hughes Corporation and a lot of John Zmirak. John, we're talking about the death penalty. Again, the incongruity just kills me. A little Hughes Corporation, a little Don't Rock the Boat, and a little death penalty conversation. What you said, though, John, justice. Let me play devil's advocate. I would say, okay, wait a minute. Justice. Doesn't the Bible say, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord? God is the one who determines justice. Is it not an archaic idea that we ought to be dispensing justice, that the arm of the state ought to be dispensing justice? What say you?
St. Paul said that. St. Paul said that the Caesar doesn't carry the sword in vain.
But wait a minute. Wasn't St. Paul a Catholic? I'm a Protestant evangelical.
Well, yes, he was.
Okay.
Don't worry. When you get to heaven, you'll be Catholic too.
Okay, but St. Paul says that. Is that in Romans? Does he say that?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? You're a Catholic.
You tell me. I can only give you quotes from Tolkien.
You're a Catholic. You can only quote Tolkien from memory. That's right. That's right. Okay, well, but it is it is funny to me that you're right. When St. Paul in Romans 13 talks about the state, why we need to obey the state, and I don't know if he makes the whole case there in Romans 13, but he touches upon it there and in someplace else. If not there, in his letters, he talks about this issue of the state being the arm of justice.
And it goes back to the covenant of Noah.
Right.
One of the first things God demanded of us was that we execute murderers. How if we have gotten past the standard God offered us that was practiced throughout the world until like 1965... but suddenly, Pope Francis says, we now have a better understanding of morality than we did 60 years ago. Really? Now that we're aborting millions of children every year and doing sex change operations and divorcing everyone and doing same-sex marriage, the world suddenly, we have a better understanding of morality than we did in the 1950s? In the 1950s, Pius XII supported the execution of the Nazi war criminals at Nuremberg, and he urged it to happen as quickly as possible.
Right.
And he said, he quoted the Council of Trent, the state is the legitimate avenger of crime. The legitimate avenger of crime. If somebody murders your wife or your daughter, you have a right to some kind of payback. You have a right.
Well, you know, when you say payback,
we don't want you to do it individually, but the state takes over and does it for you. You have a right to that.
It is. I mean, when you say payback, it makes it sound a little bit less high-minded. But I think what you mean is going back to the word justice. In other words, you say, look, a life was taken. Someone was murdered. There must be justice. There must be justice to allow my daughter or my wife to be murdered, and not to execute that criminal in a way does violence to the idea of justice itself. I mean, that to me is the issue.
Liberal Christians are getting even worse. Pope Francis is now against life imprisonment. He wants to abolish the death penalty and also imprisonment.
How does he feel about people jumping turnstiles? Can you take us to that? We're out of time, fortunately, John. I really wish we could talk about what the Pope thinks about people jumping turnstiles and smoking weed on the street, even though it's illegal. I'm sure he's for all that. You know, he should run for president in the Democratic Party. If only he had been born in the United States of America. We're out of time. John Zmierich, thank you, folks. Have a spectacular weekend. God bless you.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.